Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview this weekend's Austrian Grand Prix. And when I say we, it's actually just the two of us. Clearly the heat has gotten to Timo and he's had to go and lay down in a dark room being gently fanned. So it's just the two of us. Miss Ellie Mae Taylor, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I don't actually think it's too hot. I've been outside cleaning the windows of this house most of the day, and I've been fine.
You like the warm, though. You always prefer it warmer than cold.
Oh, I love the heat.
Exactly. This is perfect temperature for you. This is ideal ambient. Yeah.
It's. I'm in my element, so I'm all good. How are you?
Warm. It's been another warm day, but yeah, I've got a fan on. I've got plenty of cold drinks. We've been muscling through it, and I'm looking forward to the Austrian Grand Prix because it's looking like a warm one there as well. We'll get to that in due course, but we'll dive into some news to start with. And obviously we're off to the Red Bull Ring, and well, previously we've always known this as a bit of a problem for track limits, but they've added some new gravel traps to its layout to try and prevent track limit penalties this weekend. Two 2.5 meter wide traps have been added to the exits of turn 9 and 10. The idea is this will sort of deter drivers from extending their exits of the turns in a bid for lap times. This is sort of what we want to see. It forces a bit more of the old school style of driving. You keep it within the lines and away you go. If you get it on the gravel, bit of opposite lock and throttle it out. But this sort of led to a bit of digging around and reading a couple of news stories. And the FIA last year investigated over 1,200 potential track limit infringements during the race. A total of 83 were actually identified, all of which occurred at turns 9 and 10. 8 drivers were penalised, including everyone's fan favourite, Esteban Ocon, who was given a total of 4 separate sanctions adding up to 30 seconds each, which is genuinely quite impressive. It's just mad numbers, but at least they've targeted the right corners.
I forgot that we sort of had that debacle last time. Because the fact that there were so many, they were then late putting them out, weren't they? And did it then change the order of the results as well?
Yeah, I think it? Aston Martin queried it and challenged a few of them. So the results kept shuffling up and down and up and down as people sort of contested it and sort of said, hang on, what about that? What about that? And eventually it was sort of like several hours later. Like, I think a lot of like the post show had gone out on Sky. They were swapping over to IndyCar or something, and we still didn't know the actual finishing order.
The one where Fernando Alonso was third, then George Russell was third, then Fernando Alonso was third again.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because I know something similar happened with Fernando Alonso in Saudi Arabia a couple of seasons ago, but it was definitely happened again with him, funnily enough, in Austria. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was that exact one. But it was definitely Aston Martin that queried it, and it saw sort of some of the grid bouncing happening. It was just jolly strange, but
it should hopefully stop that this time round. I mean, how many laps are there to a...
Ooh, the Austrian Grand Prix is always quite a long lap count because it's quite a short circuit. This year's, it will be 71 laps.
So 71 laps with what, 20?
20 drivers.
20 drivers. So how many laps is that all together in total?
20 times 71 is 1,420. So it means that on average...
They pretty much almost looked at every driver every lap.
Yes, short of just by about 200, yeah. And obviously it covers 2 corners, so generally speaking, we're assuming that some drivers probably went off in both and some didn't. It's law of averages, but yeah, it's just a bit nuts, yeah.
That is mad. Well, it should hopefully cut that out. Shouldn't have that this year.
You'd think, but we've also got a sprint race again, so that's going to be sort of added on by a further however many 24 laps the sprint's going to be. So,
did we not have one last year? We had one
there last year as well. I don't recall there being quite so many in the sprint, but the sprint was also damp as well, I think, so it might have been.
That's true.
Slightly different sort of.
Stayed off. Which then kind of proved that you can indeed stay within track limits if you have to. because obviously in the wet they don't want to go on the curb because it's slippery.
Yes. Yeah, so it can be done, but the gravel traps just sort of hem it in a bit more, 2.5 meters wide as well, really sort of adds a bit of depth to it. So it's not tweaking the layout in sort of the actual circuit, but it just means that we should have a slightly different aspect to the racing, and potentially FP1 or the one practice session we'll see will have drivers looking for new lines through those turns and really be sort of shaking up the field a little bit. But of course, we'll get to that when we get to it. Sticking with the Red Bull news, this time we're looking at their engine department, who have lost an engine, which admittedly, when I first read this, I thought they'd simply sort of misplaced it sort of behind the sofa. But what it, they actually know where it is, and it's in Honda's HQ. This is the engine that Max had swapped out of his car at the start of the Canadian Grand Prix weekend, and it's reportedly too gone to be saved. It suffered a major electronics failure, and essentially, at this point, it's easier just to bang in a new engine and take the penalty than it would be to replace all the parts, which you'd still get a penalty for. So, yeah, essentially, what has happened is Red Bull have now used up their full stash. They've got his final engine from his cache into the back of the car. And if he needs a fresh engine at some point this season, grid penalties. Otherwise, he'll just be sort of picking it through and cycling through the existing engines in his pool.
I mean, first of all, I'd be curious to know about other teams' engine allocations, what they've got in comparison, because then you know sort of where Red Bull are against, or Max is against, sort of the competitors near him. The other thing is that I mean, we see most drivers take another engine anyway, don't we? So
Would you
I
like
guess.
to know? I've found the details.
Come on then.
Okay, so there are two drivers that have used up all their ICEs, their TCs, which is your turbochargers, MGUHs, MGUKs, their energy stores, and their control electronics. And they are, as we mentioned, Max Verstappen. The other one is Pierre Gasly, interestingly enough, has blown through his entire set. Valtteri Bottas has chewed through his entire cache and then received penalties already for his electronic stores and his control electronics. He's on three, you're allowed two. And then, sort of elsewhere, when it comes down to just the pure ICEs, you're allowed four in a season. Sergio's on three, Russell's on two, Hamilton's on three, Leclerc's on three, Sainz is on three, Piastri's on two, Norris on two, Stroll and Alonso two, Ocon three, Albon three, Sargeant two, Ricciardo three, Tsunoda three, Bottas, Zhou, Magnussen, and Hülkenberg on two. So it's weird that it's happened to Verstappen so early compared to everyone else.
It does mean that McLaren have, you would think, maybe coming into the end of the season will have the upper hand there, but they've only used two. They've
Yeah.
some nice fresh engines that they
They've
haven't
got
used.
some power circuits coming up. You look at things like Spa and
Even.
COTA, yeah, or Silverstone, yeah. They've got the chance to just drop in a nice, spicy, fresh engine and go whoop. So, yeah, interesting there for them. Elsewhere down the field, you've got other bits and pieces, gearbox casings and stuff that some drivers have used up more than others, but you've got relatively lenient on those gearbox bits. You've got five of each of those. EX is exhaust systems. You're allowed to get through eight of them. And funnily enough, Max has got through five already. The only other people that are really sort of close to that limit are Sainz, who's got through four of them. Gasly's got through five, unsurprisingly. Both RBs have got through four exhausts, so has Sergio Perez. So some interesting mixes as to who's getting through what bits at what rate. But yeah, certainly Charles Leclerc has also got through all four of his MGUH allocations at the moment as well. So,
Yeah, that definitely still comes back to them. McLaren really have the upper hand, maybe as well. Mercedes.
Yeah, Mercedes very low in that they haven't even got through all their electronic stores and control electronics. McLaren have at least blown through their electronic stores and control electronics. And they did that fairly early in the season. They were onto their second ones of those. I recall they had a major issue with them fairly early on and had to make a swap. So all still to play for, and equally for the long run championship, this puts a bit more pressure onto Max and Red Bull, especially when it comes to managing performance through a race. But we'll see how that goes. When it comes to the driver market, which is something that I certainly like to speculate on a lot at the moment, it's actually been suspiciously quiet since we last recorded, though Carlos Sainz is now also in talks with Alpine, according to various paddock sources. But at this point, he's been in talks with anyone and everyone, so that's not hugely surprising. The more concrete thing, which also sort of scuppers something I said on the last recording, is that Kleiner Zeitung has reported that Liam Lawson could be set to take a seat at RB for 2025. Shareholders have stipulated that RB is a junior team to Red Bull and a proving ground for drivers. The original goal was that Ricciardo would be considered for Red Bull, but that seat now belongs to Perez, so the plan is no longer valid. This is the sentiment they've put forwards. And essentially, it came to help Marco to sort of consolidate what they were saying, and he said, "We will have to put a young driver in there soon. That would be Liam Lawson." So, if this Austrian sports mag is to be believed, that is very interesting indeed.
I mean, well, firstly with Carlos, I mean, a move to Alpine was sort of never on the cards, or we never had any knowledge of it until apparently sort of Flavio joined them. I mean, obviously he left the Red Bull program for Renault, but I'm not sure I can see him going back there. With Liam Lawson, I mean, he showed the talent last year when he was filling in for Ricciardo. He coped very well on a different variety of circuits, so it really would be nice to see him in F1. He certainly proved his worth. I'll still stick by... and they kind of did it the other day, but they should talk their drivers out via Red Bull Soapbox Racing. I mean, annoyingly, they just had their soapbox, haven't they, this last weekend. But I think that's how they sort it out. Sort out the current drivers, sort out the junior program.
Well, I mean, they're heading to their sort of home circuit, Red Bull. So they often do some sort of big promotional stunt thing. Previously, there's been sort of head-to-heads with the Red Bull versus AlphaTauri drivers. So I think they should sort of spin that off into a sort of Takeshi's Castle style thing that proves which driver should be getting into the top seats and who gets stuck on the reserves bench. But there's got to be an easy way of solving this. But again, everything still hangs in the lurch until we know what Carlos Sainz is doing. And the constant swirling rumours suggest that maybe this weekend is the weekend that he will announce what he's up to. And sure as hell hope he hurries up with it, because I've got tenterhooks here. I want to know.
Do you think he's thriving off it? Do you think he loves the fact that he knows he's the one that's...
He lives for being the centre of attention. Yeah. Much like me, he is an absolute attention whore and is just loving being in the spotlight every weekend with people wanting to talk to him.
I disagree with that.
There we go. We'll move on then to some fun facts as we go into the Austrian Grand Prix. And interestingly, it's actually been a decade since we started coming to the Red Bull Ring in a modern iteration. Obviously, we came to it when it was called the A1 GP Ring quite a few years back. And then we stopped and then we returned in 2014. So it's been 10 years of it. And, well, interestingly, Max has the most wins around the circuit in that time. Bottas and Rosberg are tied for second with two apiece. And then Lewis and Charles have one win round here each. So a surprisingly small number of drivers and a bit of domination from Max.
Well, I think it's interesting sort of how Hamilton hasn't really been successful at this track compared to sort of other circuits. I mean, I think it's mainly also because it hasn't previously been a track that favours Mercedes. So I think that mainly comes into play here with the sort of high altitude. It's always really favoured the Red Bulls, which I think is why Max is so... Obviously, he's got his four wins and is the sort of dominant driver here.
Mm. I think it's obviously going to be an important weekend for Sergio Perez as well. I think it gets mentioned a bit when we get into our predictions, but of course, he's got a lot to prove. This is Red Bull's home weekend. He's recently been re-signed as a driver, and there are still questions circling around whether or not he should have been re-signed. So how do you think Perez is going to do this weekend before we actually dive into our predictions in and of themselves?
I think it's actually going to be hard for him. I know I'm sure he got his lap time. Did he get his lap times deleted when qualifying? And then it either got reinstated or he ended up being not doing that well.
Let me check.
I know there
Sergio
was.
Perez, he came 15th in standard qualifying, so possibly had some lap times deleted that bumped him down. Yeah, his fastest lap time in Q2 was 2 minutes and six. So clearly he had a quicker time in there, but it was obviously wiped out.
So he needs to obviously not do that, first of all. But I also think it will be tough. I mean, if you go by the past 2 previous years, Ferrari have been strong here. If you, I'm still heartbroken about 2022 when Carlos's engine went here, but obviously this is the race where we saw Lando with the upgrades be really good and successful here. Obviously, Oscar didn't have them yet. I'm not sure it'll be a Mercedes track, but I think there will be sort of a lot of teams up there. So I think it will be hard for Perez to really, he has to do it on merit. He can't do it just because, well, Red Bull maybe not be the fastest car anymore, but he hasn't got that sort of security.
Yeah, the pressure is almost doubled in the fact that that Red Bull is not, or possibly not, the top car on the grid. Last year's top 10, of course, starting at the top, Max Verstappen winning the race, 5 seconds behind him, Charles Leclerc, Sergio Perez 17 seconds off the pace, Lando Norris 26 seconds off, and then P5, Fernando Alonso, P6, Carlos Sainz, P7, George Russell, 8th, Lewis Hamilton, 9th, Lance Stroll, and P10, Pierre Gasly, though I will add in P11, which was Alex Albon on the lead lap as well, just about. So there's sort of scope for quite a lot of cars to do well at this circuit, and it's often a relatively jumbled up race that, again, last year, Haas Ferrari of Nico Hülkenberg retired on lap 12 engine failure. So the Ferrari engines just aren't fans of this track.
I was just about to say that. I'm pretty sure that Hülkenberg was doing well and then his engine just went.
Especially after it picked up points in the sprint as well.
I mean, Haas seemed to do really well around here. They did well with Mick Schumacher and Kevin Magnussen as well the year prior to that. So
Been years back under the old sort of way in the early Steiner days, they were sort of P5 and P6 at one of the Austrian Grand Prix or something ridiculous like that. They've got form, and possibly because it's a relatively easy to understand circuit, they're just able to set the car up better. It's a lot less demanding in a variety of ways. You can have a sort of slightly more tolerant setup, but we'll wait and see what the racing provides. So we'll dive into looking ahead at the weekend with some predictions, and we'll start with the weather forecast. I figured we'd bring it back because there's not much else to talk about. And going into the weekend, rain and thunderstorms are forecast, but this is more for the Thursday than anything. So expecting a very green track. However, with all the feeder series running this weekend, the track will likely rubber in quite quickly. We've obviously got F2 and F3, and probably like a Porsche Super Cup or something that's going to be kicking around. So there'll be plenty of action to put some Pirelli rubber down into the surface. When we get to Friday, it is relatively high pressures and warm with thunderstorms moving through in the afternoon, but any rain is likely to be late in the day and quite minimal, and sort of likely to dry up pretty sharpish. Saturday is warm again with fewer changes to the weather front moving through. Sunday is much the same, not quite the same highs temperature-wise, but a slightly increased wind speed. Not hugely gusty, but a bit more blowy. So there's going to certainly be advantages going into headwinds, tailwinds, and crosswinds, which, as we know, isn't exactly Williams' forte, is dealing with interesting wind changes.
I'm trying to think about previous years because obviously it's obviously a high altitude track, but you never quite, I don't ever recall ever hearing that it's been like wind has been a factor, you know?
It sits very much in a natural sort of amphitheater, so it's quite protected from the wind. I think the forecast I got was literally sort of the town next door. I don't think they have their own weather station there, although I'm certain they probably do for Grand Prix weekends, fire one up. But yeah, I think wind will take with a pinch of salt. But certainly when it comes to temperatures and the rain moving through, we'll have to see what it does. And again, hot track, it's not a particularly aggressive track rubber wise, but certainly a warm one will help it develop early on in the weekend. Which could also mean we see a shaken up grid between the race and the sprint, because of course you set the race sprint grid, then you sprint, then you race, isn't it? practice, sprint qualifying, sprint, race qualifying, race, isn't it?
Yes.
So we could have significantly different grids for the sprint than the Grand Prix with a slightly more rubbered in and warmer track, which will be interesting to see if that comes to fruition. Regardless, it's time to make our predictions specifically for the Grand Prix. We aren't really going to touch the sprint. So Timo, in his absence, predicted a Charles Leclerc pole position, which I don't think is outside the realms of possibility this weekend.
I don't either, really. I think, I don't know, I'm kind of coming into this weekend thinking it's anyone's sort of game on, really.
Certainly after the last few rounds where there's been a lot more people able to get within touching distance of Max, or in some cases beat him, it's an interesting one, especially over one lap. It looks like a far more open field than I think anyone really wants it to be. Certainly if you're Red Bull, you don't want to see those sort of openings appearing in the field. Ellie May, you've gone for Lando Norris, and again I think fits in nicely with the overall sentiment.
I think, I think McLaren will be strong here. So I thought I'll go with Lando. He's looking around on that.
And I've gone for Max Verstappen because I sort of need points in the championship for predictions. And well, it's Red Bull's home race. He's able to perform under pressure. So I don't know how he does with other Queen songs, but under pressure is pretty good. So we'll see how he does this weekend when it comes to one lap pace and whether he's able to pull it out the bag in the race. So when it comes to the podium, Timo thinks Sergio is going to have a huge change of form and come out on top, with Lewis Hamilton in second and Charles Leclerc third. So two future teammates, someone buoyed by a previous podium in Spain, and Perez on the top of the rostrum, which is an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, the other two are definitely cool. But Perez, I mean, why not? Show everyone the reason Red Bull gave you a 2-year contract.
Yeah, I mean, no time like the present to prove it, and certainly no time like your team's home race to do it either. So we'll wait and see. You've gone a bit more left field with yours. You've gone for a double
Well,
McLaren and then a Red Bull.
because when we made our predictions of when Oscar Piastri will get his first race, first win, I said Austria. So I'll stick to my guns and I'll go all in, say that he wins it. Lando Norris in second behind him and Max Verstappen in third. McLaren are going to dominate this weekend.
I wouldn't hate that to happen. I'd be curious to see it happen. I think it proved to be a very interesting 71 laps, especially if Piastri gets into the lead early on. And then we're left with sort of very much a Monaco sort of, oh God, don't screw it up, don't screw it up, don't screw it up, don't screw it up for sort of 70 laps, just sort of hoping nothing goes wrong. I'm looking forward to that. I've played it fairly straight down the line with a Verstappen Norris Sainz podium. Again, I think
You're
potentially
hedging your bet.
cynically,
You're
yeah,
hedging.
hedging my bets. Verstappen is probably going to smack it on pole and sort of lead lights to flag. Norris in second is going to have a fun time chasing him down and really fighting for it. He loves this circuit. We've seen him go well here, and the McLaren is on absolutely fine form.
It was just for a podium here as well, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, his first
At
podium back in
Lando.
the COVID times. Yeah, last lap Lando. And then Carlos Sainz has had sort of mixed results around this track. I think he's finally going to turn that around and bang in a podium here. I don't think he's podiumed here before. So, first time for everything, and we'll see how he does with that. Meanwhile, fastest lap, Timo stuck with his usual guns of Carlos Sainz. You've gone for Lewis Hamilton.
No real thought behind it, just thought pick a driver, any driver. There's 20. What's the first name that comes to mind?
I mean, the Mercedes has made steps forward. He's going to be buoyed by a podium in Spain. Maybe it'll happen.
Maybe he's chasing down Max Verstappen for third. Who knows?
Maybe. Maybe. I, meanwhile, have gone for Lando Norris. Again, it's going to be one of those sort of last lap Landos. He's hunting him down, and maybe in a bit of a sort of memory of Spain earlier on, he will be sort of chasing him down in the final few laps, but it might not be enough too early or too little too late to spin the phrase around the correct way.
Or he's going fast enough so that Max Verstappen can't catch him to allow Oscar the win.
Yeah, he's sort of trying to break the DRS so Verstappen and can't slingshot past him in your mind for your podium. That's what you're thinking. Fair dues. And then we get to our wild prediction. Ellie Mae, we've already sort of hinted at yours through the recording of this podcast. Sergio Perez, top five.
Yeah, and it kind of annoys me that that's wild enough.
Yeah, but again, if you look back at his form, if we go back to sort of qualifying last year, there was an interesting point I did spot. Sergio Perez committed more track limit violations, denying him a spot in Q3, the third session, for the fourth consecutive time. So clearly, coming up to Austria last year, he wasn't on great form, and he hasn't been especially sparkling this year coming up to Austria. So I think it's quite fair against the form we've seen that that's wild in its own weird little way.
Time to turn it around, Sergio. Come on.
Get on with it, boy. Meanwhile, Timo, both Williams in Q3, which I think Albon could achieve. I'm yet to be proven wrong about Logan Sargeant. We'll see what happens to him.
I mean, at least he's now got the same chassis, so it's more likely.
It's an equitable playing field, but we'll wait and see. Meanwhile, the rumors on him moving to IndyCar grow louder and louder. A few more publications have picked up on it with additional supporting rumors on that one. So maybe one of my wild sort of speculative bits of paddock theory might finally come true. Meanwhile, my wild prediction, Haas double points. They go well here, but they've really been struggling to sort of break into the top 10 the past few races. So I think off the back of that, they've got a bit of an uphill climb to get there this weekend, and it'd be nice to see them do it.
I don't think it's that wild. I think that they can. I don't know. Maybe I'm coming in with too much optimism and confidence for them, but I think Haas can do it around here.
I don't
It's
know.
one of
They
the more likely ones, I think.
well, they haven't had double points yet this season, though, is part of my theory. They've had it once, sorry, Australia, where they got a ninth and 10th. That's it, a
So they get
one-off.
to beat Aussies.
Yeah. Any locations that begin with the letter A, so Australia, Austria, Azerbaijan, and Abu Dhabi. They've got two more after this to get double points. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. It's not sparkling when it comes to its far-fetchedness, but
You're going to have to put them in for the other two then.
okay. So also Azerbaijan and Abu Dhabi. Azerbaijan and Abu Dhabi. Right. I've written it into the document. It's signed, sealed, and delivered. That is our predictions made. Have you got any final points you want to drop in for the Austrian Grand Prix ahead of this weekend?
I wonder what wacky thing they'll do. You know, like throwing someone out of a, well, not throwing someone out of an airplane, but you know, like they always have something, some mad stunts going on.
There's always some sort of Red Bull stunt show going on. Last year, it was the Jetman that crashed, and we got the perfect Oscar Piastri reaction too. But I don't know what they're going to do this year. I don't know. How do you go up one up from that?
It's their 10th anniversary. They've got to go hard.
Go big or go home time for Red Bull and for Sergio Perez. I think that is a perfect sentiment on which to end this week's podcast. In the meantime, if you want any more from any of us, Ellie Mae, where can you be found?
Oh, I don't know. My bed.
Relaxing in a tranquil environment.
Yeah, maybe just find a nice heat spot as
Little sun
well.
spot, lay down in that like a cat.
Yeah, like a cat. I'm exactly like a cat. So.
We'll go for that. And if you want more from me, you can, of course, pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly, which has, of course, the story of Ellie Mae and I going rallying in it and a few other bits besides. We're looking back at the history of Castle Bromwich for Jaguar and, interestingly, Spitfire production, plus news, reviews, events coverage, and all the rest of it. And if you want more from just me, you can find me on social media as at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And, of course, a shout out to our listeners in Okotox, which is just south of Calgary in Canada. Lovely to have you all listening in, and we're spoiled for choice when it comes to trying to scrounge beer from you, as you've got two breweries. Hubtown, if you're listening, a case of copyright infringement would be ace, and Big Beaver Brewing, your New England IPA sounds perfect. Race is on. First brewery to get us a case gets a second shout out or something. I don't know, we'll figure that out if it happens. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again soon with a review of the Austrian Grand Prix weekend.